sports meets life with an unbiased perspective. This is your wake-up call with Dan Tortora.
Welcome here to Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora. Great to be back here in the studio here on WakeUpCallDT.com. Plenty to talk about, plenty to do, folks. Love bringing you Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora. It's a show that is very, very close to my heart. A show that was started a few years back that was actually the product of the Dan Tortora show. And just a little bit of a name change here, a different feel, and an upgrade to what I was doing before, in the sense of trying to bring you the best, adding in the annoying moment of the week, having the art of leadership, doing the path to hope, tweet of the week, so many different things that I love to involve you with here on the show, and just really make it different than what you hear when you turn on the radio or turn on the television or read the newspaper, to make something different for you here, a getaway, so to speak, but also link it to your life and enjoy ourselves while we're doing it. So thank you so much for tuning in. I truly appreciate it. Here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on WakeUpCallDT.com. Plenty to bring you today. The annoying moment of the week, we have a double dose of that, folks. So if you've been missing the annoying moment of the week, we have two scoops of it, proudly brought to you by Carvel DeWitt right here in Syracuse, New York. At the end of Erie Boulevard, you will find Carvel DeWitt, 4322 East Genesee Street, the only home of the Wake Up Call Sunday. And we'll talk about that Sunday coming up shortly here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora. Also, we're going to get into the Path to Hope, proudly brought to you by Carey and Daily Physical Therapy. They've helped me on my path to hope. I'll have an update with you on how I'm doing. And we'll also talk about some other people on their path to hope, find out who those people are coming up. And we'll talk about Revis Island moving closer to the water, where Darrell Revis will now call home. We'll talk about Tony Romo. The statement was made put up or shut up by DeMarcus Ware. He's since come out, one of the defensive players for the Dallas Cowboys, and made the statement that he wasn't trying to say anything negative about Tony Romo. He was saying in general to put up or shut up as a player on the Dallas Cowboys. If you're going to be out there, do something. Well, I'm going to ask you the question, Romo, put up or shut up, keep him or don't keep him. That question is up on Facebook. Feel free to answer that, facebook.com/wakeupcalldt. That's D as in Dan, T as in Thomas. And you can also answer the question about Tony Romo, put up or shut up, on Twitter, @calldt. Do you think he will do well this season, or do you have him not doing so well? So make sure you get out there and give me your responses there. Will Tony Romo have a good season? Will he be worth that contract, or is it a waste of money? Let me know what you're thinking there. And we'll also get into two very special exclusive interviews that you're only going to hear right here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on WakeUpCallDT.com. That is a conversation with Andrea Ashline, who was one of the runners at the Boston Marathon. She gives her account coming up here on the show. You don't want to miss anything that Andrea and I will have to talk about. So much to go into in her experience in Boston, and to find out just what people have been doing in Boston to reach out a hand to help out. You don't want to miss this account of people helping people and doing something truly special here, where sports meets life. In the moment of crisis, the Boston Marathon brought a sport into life in a very special way, bonding lives that would have never been connected, you'd think, if not for what happened. These lives were, and I'll tell you how. Andrea will actually tell you how, coming up here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora. And we'll also have an exclusive from Mike Oresko, who is the current commissioner of the American Athletic Conference, the newest conference in the NCAA. Used to be the Big East, then the Catholic Seven broke away, they add a few teams, they become the new Big East, and the Big East has to change their name. They're the American Athletic Conference. I had an opportunity to speak exclusively with Mike Oresko when I was down at the Final Four, and I will proudly bring you that very, very soon here on the show. Happy to finally be able to bring it to you. I let some of you know that it was coming, and it's finally here to hear from Mike Oresko and so many things that he has to say about what the Big East has been able to do in basketball this season in its final season the way it is, the future of the American Athletic Conference, and so much more. You don't want to miss that. So that is what you have to look forward to here on Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, and we'll get started first and foremost with the annoying moment of the week. But as you know, if you've listened to the show before, I can't talk about any annoying moments until you hear this. Oh, the voice of Janice from Friends. How you missed it, folks. I know you did. That's why I bring it to you every time we talk about the annoying moment of the week. Proudly brought to you by Carvel DeWitt, where you can get your wake-up call Sunday, folks. Soft serve vanilla, chocolate, or if you're feeling crazy, twist it up. And mix with it cookie dough pieces and caramel drizzled all throughout your Sunday with a cherry on top and whipped cream if you'd like. That is the wake-up call Sunday that you can only get at Carvel DeWitt. And get this, folks, you can now get Carvel Light, which is your choice, once again, of soft serve chocolate, vanilla, or a twist that you can have now with, that will give you less calories. Same great flavor, less calories. You can get the Wake Up Call Sunday and not have to worry about your calorie intake for the day. How's that for you? Carvel DeWitt, Wake Up Call Sunday, and they're bringing you the annoying moment of the week right now. And the first annoying moment, as we split into two, you know, if you've listened to the show before, very rarely can I just sit down with one annoying moment and say, okay, you know what? That's it. That's the annoying moment of the week. That's got to be it. Because, unfortunately, and fortunately for the show, unfortunately in life, there's a lot of annoying moments. And the first one I want to bring to you are players getting in trouble multiple times and still getting contracts, still getting on teams, still finding a way. And one of those guys, linebacker Rolando McClain, who plays for the Baltimore Ravens, used to play for the Oakland Raiders, got himself in some trouble. He's done it before. He's been in trouble before. But this time, Lieutenant John Crouch of Decatur, Alabama, he's in their police department. He's their public information officer. He describes what happened. He said, quote, "They continued trying to move the people out of the street, and they heard it again, and it appeared whoever it was trying to get the crowd stirred up. They eventually identified the person in the crowd. They moved in, told him he was under arrest for disorderly conduct, at which point he tried to jerk away," end quote. That is coming from this disturbance where there was in excess of 700 people that were said to be at this local park, and they were trying to get the people to move. They heard someone yelling, and what they were referring to in that last quote by Crouch, what I was referring to, is this quote, which I won't say the word, obviously, but blank the police. That was a quote being yelled, blank the police. They try to get the people out. They try to move, you know, disperse the 700 people getting together. They hear it, and they think that this person is trying to get the crowd going, you know, get them hyped up against the police. And then it goes on to say, Crouch stated, quote, "The officers grabbed his arms. He continued to struggle," referring to McClain, "trying to pull the officers further into the crowd. They did eventually get handcuffs on him, and at that point, they recognized him at Rolando McClain. So he's since been charged with disorderly conduct and resisting arrest," end quote. That all coming from Crouch. This isn't the first time, though, that McClain has been in trouble. Third time he's been arrested in Decatur since 2011. So we sit here in the middle part, so to speak, of 2013. Hard to believe. I thought January happened last month. That's how fast this year has been moving. To me, the ball dropped. It's January. There's snow on the ground up in Syracuse. And now all of a sudden, it's almost May. Hard to believe. Also hard to believe that a guy like McClain, who's gotten in trouble three times being arrested in his hometown of Decatur, to continue receiving contracts. Now, yes, there has been moments where the case gets dropped. Last May, four misdemeanors, the case is dropped. No charges against McClain when originally reckless endangerment, menacing, third-degree assault, firing a gun in the city limits. That was appealed by McClain, and then the prosecutors make the decision, okay, you know what, we're not going to take this anywhere. They stop it. So there has been moments where McClain you know, is not going to get, he's not charged with something. But being arrested three different times since 2011 and having this issue now where making the statements of resisting arrest, the statement made by John Crouch of McClain trying to pull the police into the crowd, saying statements like blank the police, and having this atmosphere. Now, we weren't at this atmosphere. A lot of you listening weren't at it. I wasn't at this event or wherever it was that there's more than 700 people in this park. We weren't there. What I can say, though, is that in a time like this, especially after everything that happened in Boston, to have a bunch of people assembled in an area and to try and rile up a crowd, to try and create a disturbance, so to speak, this country right now is coming off the heels of something that's a travesty, something that is changing lives forever. People that will never have their foot back, people that will never have their leg back, their arm back, people that won't have their son back. So in this point in time, this is not the time to do this. This is not the time to have this happening recently here, because the statement being made by Lieutenant John Crouch was made on Monday, April 22nd. So this disturbance, this issue of having so many people in one area and then having McClain allegedly trying to rile people up against the police, happened Sunday, April 21st. The Monday before everything happens in Boston. So that to me is an issue in and of itself. You know, the cops tell you, okay, it's time to go, there's too many people, or it's too loud, or whatever it may be. Okay, you know, a cop abusing somebody, a cop doing something unlawful, that's another thing. If that's the case, then obviously that cop needs to be brought in front of somebody. But what it sounds like here is that the cops are saying, listen, you guys got to leave. And instead of just going and keeping quiet and moving along, McClain allegedly tries to make this an issue with the police and tries to start something with the police, so to speak, or try and get somebody to start something. With everything that the police have been through already and the federal agents have been through, you know, and yeah, this is down in Alabama, but it doesn't matter where it is. It doesn't have to be in Boston. People are already in this moment thinking anything can happen at any given time anywhere. So that's one issue I have with this. The other issue I have with this that makes it the annoying moment of the week, proudly brought to you by Carvel DeWitt, is the fact that this is a guy who's been arrested multiple times. And as a league, the NFL, I understand you need to get your players, but hear me out here. There are so many teams in Division 1A, Division 1 AA, or you want to call it FBS, SCS, or FCS, Division 2 football, JUCO football. There's football all over this country. There's plenty of people that want to make it. D3 football, okay? Jerry Rice, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, wide receiver of all time in the NFL, Division 3 player. There are so many guys hungry for a job in the NFL. So my thing is, you can't come to me and tell me, Dan, this guy, Rolando McClain, Pac-Man Jones, any of these guys, they are so talented that no matter what they do off the field, I have a responsibility to keep them on this team. Because listen, they're too good. They win too many games for me. They're too much for me to get rid of. I would lose too much. Do you lose your morals when you keep them? Do you lose your values? Do you lose your respect in the community? Do you lose the dignity of the franchise? Do you lose the positive message, the role model element of the franchise to keep a player like that? Now, I'm not saying that I wish anybody loses their job. I'm never going to say that. That's not me. What I'm saying is, to me, there are so many people hungry for your job that aren't going to go out and have a domestic disturbance. They're not going to go out to a nightclub like Pac-Man Jones and act like an idiot, okay? They're not going to do stuff like that. There's people that are hardworking that just want to get on the field, do their job, come home, and be happy with the output they put in. They want a Super Bowl. They're focused. So to me, this is an annoying moment because, number one, it comes at a time where you don't need to be doing any disturbance. Not as if there's any good time for a disturbance, but I mean especially now with everything that happened in Boston. And number two, because of the fact that no player to me is untouchable. No player to me has talent that trumps morals and values to me. If you are a terrible... I don't want to say a terrible human being. If you make bad choices, okay? If you're terrible at the choices you make, because I don't believe anyone's inherently bad. I believe you choose to be. If you're one of those people that chooses to go out and do things, and I have to babysit you, I have to watch over you. In the case of Dez Bryant, I have to be Jerry Jones, and I have to sit down and create a set of rules for just you, with everything else that he has to do. To me, it's not worth it. Do I believe in second chances? Absolutely. Pac-Man's had like 47. This Rolando McClain arrested 3 times in the past couple of years. So, when do you say enough is enough? That's my question to you. The annoying moment of the week will continue after this break here on Wake Up Call with Dan Satora on wakeupcalldt.com. Find out what else I have to sound off about, folks. I got a lot of things to talk about today. When it comes to the annoying moment of the week, it's not my fault. Something happened. I got to talk about it. That's what it's here for. Carvel DeWitt proudly brings it to you. You'll hear a message from Carvel DeWitt and Carrie and Daily Physical Therapy. Then we'll jump right back into it here on Wake Up Call with Dan Satora on wakeupcalldt.com, part of the Dan Satora Broadcast Media family.
Carvel DeWitt, it's what happy tastes like. Do you know why? Because we make ice cream. Creamy, rich, flavorful ice cream. Not yogurt or iced milk like some of our competitors. Ice cream. Fresh, by hand, daily. For the calorie conscious, we have something new for you. Our new Carvelite. Same great flavor, creaminess, and texture of our regular ice cream with only 35 calories an ounce. So whether you want an ice cream cake, flying saucer, dasher, carvelage, hard or soft ice cream, we will satisfy your craving with our fresh, handmade regular or new Carvelite ice cream. Carvel DeWitt. It's what happy tastes like.
Sometimes we can't help how we get injured, but we can help ourselves in how we get better. Hi, I'm Paula Carey from Carey and Daily Physical Therapy. I'm here on Wake Up Call to tell you that currently in New York State, you can be evaluated by a physical therapist without seeing your physician. Some insurance companies will allow up to 9 visits before a prescription is needed. At Carey and Daly Physical Therapy, our experienced staff will evaluate you and start you on a program appropriate for your injury. We know how important feeling good is to you. Let us help you improve your well-being by coming to see us at one of our 5 locations in upstate New York. Carey and Daly Physical Therapy, where we care about your body and are dedicated to helping you get well.
Find the location nearest you at CareyandDalyPT.com. That's C-A-R-E-Y and D-A-L-E-Y-P-T.com.
Welcome back here to Wake Up Call with Dan Satora on WakeUpCallDT.com, part of the Dan Satora Broadcast Media family. Want to give a special thanks to Carvel DeWitt, where you can get the Wake Up Call Sunday and the Annoying Moment of the Week, which is going on right now. Also want to thank Carrie and Daily Physical Therapy for the Path to Hope and everything that they do for this community with 5 different locations that you can get right here on WakeUpCallDT.com by simply going to the leaderboard page. Click on the leaderboard page, and you will find 5 separate locations. Click on whichever one is nearest you, and all you have to do from there is plug in your starting address, and you will have directions straight to Carrie and Daily Physical Therapy to get on your path to hope. You will literally have your path to Carrie and Daily to get that path to hope going for you. Call them at 652-4323. That's 315-652-4323 at their main office in Liverpool to set up your appointment to speak with Carrie and Daly today, Monday through Friday during normal business hours, folks. Make sure you call them and let them get you on your path to hope, because it's time. It's time. I waited, and you know, the only thing that I'm thinking is I should have gone there sooner, but since going there, I can't thank them enough for everything that they've done. Make sure you get in touch with them, folks. Getting back here and getting back in touch with the annoying moment of the week, this one is about life in general, not the sports world, so to speak. Now, there's sports players that might do this. There's people connected to sports that might do this. And I'll admit that I've done this before, and I feel bad about it. I honestly do, because it does take your focus off, and, you know, things don't always work out in a good way when this happens, you know, and you see the commercials and you hear the stories. And what I'm talking about is texting while driving. This is an annoying moment of this week. It's annoying a moment of last week, last month, last year. As far back as texting started, this is an annoying moment. Because you know that in certain states, like the state of New York, you can talk on your phone, but it has to be hands-free. You can't be holding on to your phone when you're driving or anything like that. You have to plug it into something and talk that way. You have to have both hands on the wheel or both hands prepared to be on the wheel. Well, texting while driving, it not only takes a hand off the wheel, but it takes your eyes off the road. And it's cost lives. It's changed the way that transportation is. Police can't look inside every single vehicle, but I implore you and I ask you to not make that mistake of reaching down and seeing what somebody texted you or emailed you or put on Twitter or put on Facebook. Pull over, give it a moment, wait a second, wait till you get to your destination. And like I said, I'll admit it, I've done it before. I have. I've looked at an email, I've looked at Twitter, I've looked at Facebook, I've texted. And I'm blessed to have not hurt anyone. I'm blessed to. That's all God, none of me. And from here on out, I have an oath to myself and to you, who could be driving next to me, to not do it, to wait. To wait. Be somewhere where I can actually have my car stopped and look. But to not do it while I'm driving. Because you never know who's going, what, you know, if the pedestrian's going to walk off the curb, if somebody's going to turn on red, if someone's going to go through a stop sign. You never know. You never know. And the way that this world is and how some people drive, and you know it, folks, some people are crazy. When it comes to being on the road or being anywhere out in public, you want to be make sure that you're paying attention to what's going on. And so for the times I haven't, I'm sorry to you. But we can both change the future, and we can both change the safety of not just this country, but anywhere where you're driving. Wait. Wait for the text. Wait to check Twitter. Wait to check Facebook. Wait to see where that email's from. I know you're busy. Trust me. I know about busy. But you are never busy to the point where it's ever going to equal out the life that you could take. So put the phone down, wait, and do it later. Please. Continuing here with Wake Up Call with Dan Satora on Wake Up Call DT.com. Let's take a look at the Path to Hope, proudly brought to you by Carrion Daily Physical Therapy. Talked about them just a few moments ago. And the Path to Hope, I want to talk to you about some of the athletes here that are trying to have their dreams realized in the NFL draft, that being Zach Chabane on the offensive line, Justin Pugh on the offensive line, Alec Lemon at wide receiver, Ryan Nassib at quarterback. On the defensive line, Deion Goggins, Brandon Sharp, linebacker Sariki Diabate, so many different guys trying to make it. Marcus Salas as a wide receiver, David Stevens as a tight end. There's a lot of these guys that are getting prepared. They're getting ready. They're putting themselves out there. They're trying to get an opportunity to hear their name called, to get out there and have that opportunity to play professionally. And Shamarco Thomas, pardon me, Shamarco. He'll get me for that one. I'll hear something on that one. Shamarco Thomas. By no means did I try to forget that on purpose, in no way, shape, or form. Shamarco, a phenomenal hitter out there. Great speed, good hitting ability. He's gotten better from his junior year to his senior year. And Shamarco, an even better person. Off the field, a great guy to talk to. Very respectful. And it's a pleasure talking to him every opportunity that I get, and what he's doing to take care of his family and his siblings with the loss of his father and mother. Nothing on the football field can ever amount to how great of a human being he's being right now in this community. And I can't thank him enough for that. And I truly believe he's going to be successful in the NFL. So I talked to you about some of those names. And let's talk about the path to hope, okay? I'm going to give you some of my thoughts here, a little preview, a little look in, because I'm going to be doing many different draft shows to get you ready for the NFL draft. We're going to do a lot of different things here on WakeUpCallDT.com that are going to get you involved. If you want to be involved, there's so many different ways to do so. Facebook.com/WakeUpCallDT. Twitter @CallDT, CallDT. And you can also get me by calling up on the fan line, and you check on Facebook and Twitter when that fan line is going to be open. 315-5031-FAN. That's 315-503-1326. If you're on Facebook and you're on Twitter, if you like the page, facebook.com/wakeupcallDT, and you follow me on Twitter @CallDT, those are the easiest, fastest ways for you to know what's going on when that fan line's opening. Sometimes I do it within the hour if something big happens and I want to get your thoughts. Sometimes right coming out of a game, I want to talk about something, or I know that people are getting hyped up about something and they ask me, will you open up the fan line? There will be so many different opportunities on that fan line. Please make sure that you take advantage of the opportunity to talk with me about anything that has to do in the world of sports. Open to talk about it, whatever it may be, basketball, football, soccer, tennis, anything you want to talk. Let's talk about badminton, water polo. Doesn't matter to me, folks. Whatever's on your mind, let's talk about it. Happy to do so. That's why the fan line's there, to give you a voice, which means so much to me here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tatora, with my company, Dan Tatora Broadcast Media, and in general. That's how I've always lived my life, is that a conversation goes two ways, and you have to be willing to listen as well as talk and allow someone to get their words out. You know, a lot of people that call the show tell me that this is the only show, or calling up and speaking with me, I'm the only person that gives them an opportunity to be able to expand on what they have to say, that I don't hang up on them if we have differing views, that I don't disrespect them, I don't cut them off, and I give you an opportunity to talk. We talk back and forth. We have a conversation. You know, some people, they call you up and they tell you, hey, listen, the line's going to be open. Tell me, Tony Romo, put up or shut up. Hey, it's Bob and wherever, and I think Tony Romo should put up. Okay, see you later. Click. And I'm not like that. You know, I give you an opportunity to talk about the Cowboys. What do you like about Tony Romo? If you think he's going to put up this season, why? If you think he's going to shut up and continue to struggle, why do you think that? You know, maybe we end the conversation talking about your grandma's birthday or an ex-girlfriend that you have, or we end up talking about a totally different sport. That's fine. That's what this is. It's a conversation. You have a conversation with one of your colleagues at work, or your buddy, or your wife, or your husband, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your best friend. You have a conversation with somebody. It doesn't usually just stay in one area. It goes all over the place. And that's fine. I'm more than happy to have you on here, and I appreciate everyone that calls in around this country, outside of the United States. Thank you to everyone whose support I've had. It means so much to have it, and I hope to have yours too for you listening right now. Join me on this path to hope with some of these Syracuse players that are trying to make it to the NFL. What I can say to you, in my true belief, my impartiality, now I know a lot of these guys, I've interviewed a lot of these gentlemen, I've spent time with them, and as an impartial sportscaster, I can tell you from what I know, from the talent I've seen, from what's on the field, that I believe Justin Pugh, Zach Chabane, Ryan Nassib, Shamarco Thomas, Alec Lemon, Deion Goggins will have their names called during the draft. Now, I believe Justin Pugh is a first rounder. I think that that's been clear with draft boards that have been put up, that he's a first rounder. I believe that Shamarco Thomas could be a late first round, early second round. I think Alec Lemon's a fourth round Deion Goggins, fourth or fifth round, Ryan Nassib with the Bills, they could make him the eighth pick, which I think Ryan Nassib is definitely worth taking. I think that the Bills should try and trade up from the second round, get another pick in the first round, and not necessarily use that pick because they need defensive help. They need help in a lot of other areas. But, you know, I think Ryan Nassib could find his way into the first round. I think he will be in the I think if he's in the second round with Jacksonville that has that pick early on in the second round, that there's definitely a case for them to take him if the Bills let him go or he gets out of the first round. I think a team like the Bills with so many people from the Syracuse staff are going to be wary that somebody will just take him if they pass on him. So that's something to look at. But I think he's a second rounder, if not a first rounder. I think he'll be taken somewhere in there. Same thing as Shamarco Thomas, like I said. I think Shamarco's an early second round, could sneak into the first. And Deion Goggins, to me, is a fourth or fifth rounder. And I think Zach Chabain slides in there somewhere between the fourth and the seventh round. I think it's easier to say six and seventh may find a way into the fifth, but Zach Chabain's one of those guys to me where he's been so consistent. You know, I say between the fourth and seventh round, fifth and seventh round, because I don't think there's a lot of hype around Zach Chabain. And to be honest, I don't know why. You know, I understand that Justin Pugh has a lot of people around his talent, you know, but even Justin's admitted, I wouldn't be able to do the things I did without the help of Zach Chabain. And Zach has had that consistency to lock up the left side. He's worked in special teams. He's a big guy, tall guy for the line. He understands what needs to be done. He takes up a lot of space on the line. His body, his build, his height, his weight, he's just been very, very powerful on the offensive line. And you look at what comes behind him, three straight 1,000-yard rushers, almost two last season. And yeah, some of that credit has to go to the running back, obviously, but those holes are created for you. Those blocks are made for you by other people, obviously, and Zach Chabain has been one of those people. So I think if you're a team that has a pick, which many of them do, in those later rounds, then take that opportunity and take a guy like Zach Chabain, who could be your starter. On an Arizona Cardinals team, could be a starter. There's a lot of teams. Jets team could be a starter because they need it. They need that help. And he is a very talented, disciplined man who works very hard and doesn't ask for much. And he has a chip on his shoulder, snubbed by the Big East in his senior season. And now not one of those guys that you're really talking about and bringing up a lot, wasn't invited to the combine. And that's okay, because he can do many good things for you if you give him an opportunity. So he's someone whose name I really want to hear called. And if he doesn't, he needs to be in the free agency and somebody needs to pick him up. And I'm, you know, he's a good guy. And, you know, I'm not saying this because he's a good guy and off the field, you know, a good guy to spend time with and get to know and just really a nice person. That's not why I'm saying this. I'm saying this because his work speaks volumes for him. And I think if you take a guy like Justin Pugh, then you'd be stupid to not look at a guy like Zach Chabain. Or if you take a guy like Justin Pugh early on, what are you saying about a guy like Zach Chabain? Because they worked together on the left side of the line. They locked up that line. They shored up that line on that side. Very talented guys together as a duo. You can get Justin Pugh in the first round, try and steal Zach later on, but I think Zach is a guy that definitely is the biggest sleeper out of anyone I talked about, and he should definitely be picked up. So, as I said, I'm thinking first and second round for a few of the guys, and then the middle round for Alec Lemon, those middle rounds, fourth, fifth round, probably the fourth, and Zach Chabain to be taken after that at some point. That is my path to hope for these guys, their path and where I think they're going. Where they're going to go is unclear, but I think that their path into the NFL can happen here in late April. I truly believe that. And I want to thank Carrie and Daily Physical Therapy for this little preview that I'm giving you right now of this part of the show, The Path to Hope, that they proudly bring to you here on Wake Up Call with Dan Totora on WakeUpCallDT.com. Plenty to come, plenty more from the draft, and you'll hear from some of the guys. So you don't want to miss out on that. Very special guests in my draft coverage You don't want to miss a moment of the draft coverage I will have for you folks. This is a little sneak peek of it. We'll take a quick step aside here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tatora. You'll hear from Carrie and Daily Physical Therapy, Carvel DeWitt before them, and then we're right back at it here on WakeUpCallDT.com, part of the Dan Tatora broadcast media family, as I talk to you about Revis Island finally getting closer to the water.
Carvel DeWitt, it's what happy tastes like. Do you know why? Because we make ice cream. Creamy, rich, flavorful ice cream. Not yogurt or iced milk like some of our competitors. Ice cream. Fresh, by hand, daily. For the calorie conscious, we have something new for you. Our new Carvelite. Same great flavor, creaminess, and texture of our regular ice cream with only 35 calories an ounce. So whether you want an ice cream cake, flying saucer, dasher, carvelage, hard or soft ice cream, we will satisfy your craving with our fresh, handmade regular or new Carvelite ice cream. Carvel DeWitt. It's what happy tastes like.
Sometimes we can't help how we get injured, but we can help ourselves and how we get better. Hi, I'm Paula Carey from Carey and Daly Physical Therapy. I'm here on Wake Up Call to tell you that currently in New York State, you can be evaluated by a physical therapist without seeing your physician. Some insurance companies will allow up to 9 visits before a prescription is needed. At Carey and Daly Physical Therapy, our experienced staff will evaluate you and start you on a program appropriate for your injury. We know how important feeling good is to you. Let us help you improve your well-being by coming to see us at one of our 5 locations in upstate New York. Carey and Daly Physical Therapy, where we care about your body and are dedicated to helping you get well.
Find the location nearest you at CareyandDalyPT.com. That's C-A-R-E-Y and D-A-L-E-Y-P-T.com.
Back here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tatora on WakeUpCallDT.com, part of the Dan Tatora broadcast media family. Special thanks to Carvel DeWitt and Carey and Daly Physical Therapy, as well as Dry Sick Apparel and FanHands.com. Dry Sick Apparel creating all of the hats, T-shirts that you see from Wake Up Call with Dan Tatora, the shirts that Justin Pugh and Zach Chabane were wearing, both brought to you by Dry Sick Apparel, that have Wake Up Call with Dan Tatora across the chest. And I also want to give a special thanks to FanHands.com, who were a big, big part of everything that I did. My coverage of the NCAA tournament, the Big East tournament, actually went down to Madison Square Garden for the Big East tournament, gave out some fan hands, and Syracuse fans with fanhands.com coming from Syracuse, New York, they support all different sports, any team, and one of the teams that they had fan hands for, orange and blue for Syracuse, so those loud fans you heard at Madison Square Garden, some of them were wearing fan hands, courtesy of Mark Jones and the fanhands.com team. And down at the NCAA tournament in Atlanta, Georgia, had a bunch of people that took the orange and blue fan hands from me, had an opportunity to meet some of you fans out there who are supporting Syracuse, and you put on those fan hands and wore them with pride. Fan hands also have been worn in the Army-Navy games and other teams across the country and even working outside of this country. So to the Cuse Nation, that obviously are huge supporters of Syracuse Orange teams, whatever they're doing, wherever they are, you've worn the fan hands. Army-Navy game has worn the fan hands. Other people across this country and outside of the country have put the fan hands on. They're $10, folks. It doesn't cost a lot of money, and you could do it for a great cause. Here on the Fan Corner page of WakeUpCallDT.com, there is an easy, simple instructions to get your pair of fan hands and to have some of that money donated to the victims of Hurricane Sandy, folks. These people still need help. It takes a lot of time to rebuild. New Orleans is still rebuilding from everything that happened to them, and we're looking at over 6 years ago that it happened, and they're still having to handle everything that came from Hurricane Katrina. Hurricane Sandy victims, you can help them out by simply going to the Fan Corner page right here on WakeUpCallDT.com and following the easy instructions. You get your pair of fan hands. You get to cheer on your team. Whoever your team is, wherever they are, whenever they're playing, you can cheer them on with this special fan accessory that you can't get anywhere else. And you can support the community that was affected by Hurricane Sandy. Two great things, one low price, and a phenomenal, phenomenal product that many of you were using at the Final Four and at the Big East Tournament, courtesy of FanHands.com. So I want to thank fanhands.com and Dry Stick Apparel as well. And it's time now to talk about Revis Island. Revis Island has moved, folks. Now, Long Island is an island. Obviously, it has it in the title. There's water around it. But as you know, the New York Jets do not play on the island. They do not play by the water. They play in MetLife Stadium, which is technically in New Jersey, even though they're a New York team. So, now Revis Island is by the water. He's down in Tampa. Making an agreement with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Revis Island has officially moved to the warmer climate. Post-knee surgery from an ACL injury that happened about 6 months ago, Revis said this, quote, "People are going to sit here and say, how's he going to perform? How's he going to play? Is he going to be like he was before? I understand all of that. I'm a hard worker. It's all on me. I'll give it my all." End quote. GM Mark Domenech of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers stated that the Bucs team doctors came into Tampa to look at Revis's knee and the MRI he had done a week ago in Manhattan. And from what they've seen, obviously it was enough to say, listen, the guy's worth taking. Domenech and the Buccaneers make the decision to sign an agreement with Darrell Revis, stating, quote, "We feel very confident or we wouldn't have done this. Obviously, it's a significant trade and a significant amount of money. But at the same time, we have a lot of confidence with what we've done here as an organization. We feel very good about where he's at," speaking about Revis. End quote. This is the deal. Revis involved in a trade. Revis goes to the Bucs, and the Jets get the Bucs' first-round pick in this year's draft, the 13th overall pick. Mighty fine pick there. 13th overall goes to the Jets and a fourth rounder in 2014, but it's a conditional pick. And if you haven't heard of a conditional pick before, folks, this is what it is. The pick is a certain pick, but if something were to happen, there's a clause that if something happens, usually it's if the player, that the team that's getting the player, if that player does well or accomplishes something on that new team, then the pick gets better for the team that got rid of the player. So it's an incentive. Fourth round pick in 2014 goes to the Jets. If Darrell Revis is on the Bucs roster on the third day of the 2014 league year, which would be next season, then it becomes a third round pick. So their fourth round jumps up around if Revis is still on the Bucs next season on the third day of the league year. So the Bucs give up one pick in this year's draft, and it's a good one. First round, 13th overall. We'll see what the Jets do with that. They need an offensive lineman, that's for sure. And they lose a fourth round, most likely going to be a third round pick next season. With what they give up, they get Revis. But the Bucs make out in this deal as well. Yeah, they give up a couple picks, but look at what they get Revis for. $96 million over the next six seasons, but how about this? None of it's guaranteed. No guaranteed money. Now, in NFL contracts, you'll see 8 years, $100 million, right? It was Albert Haynesworth's contract, defensive tackle, played for the Washington Redskins, used to be on the Tennessee Titans, has bounced all over the place. His contract that was signed was 8 years, $100 million. Now, more than likely, you'll never see 8 years, $100 million. Now, you may be in the league 8 years and find your way to $100 million somehow, but that contract in and of itself is typically never that long, never that amount of money. It could be 8 years, $100 million, a guaranteed of $56 million. Maybe you get a signing bonus, and in the fifth season, you have an option, six, seven, eight seasons, the team has an option to keep you, trade you, get rid of you, whatever they want to do. There's a lot of clauses in these contracts. So the interesting part of this contract with Darrell Revis, none of the money is guaranteed. None of it. None of it is guaranteed. It's not $96 million, no matter what happens, Revis, with the Bucs. If you have a bad relationship, you get injured, something happens, we'll give you $36. No. $96 million, $16 million a season, but none of it's guaranteed. Now, allegedly, Revis and the Jets were disagreeing on this contract of having $16 million a year. The Jets owed him $6 million in the last year of his contract, which would be this coming season of 2013-2014. So they allegedly did not want to sign a deal with Revis that was going to give him $16 million a season. Now the Bucks sign that deal. They give him the alleged $16 million that he wants, but none of it's guaranteed. He's got to earn it. He has to earn that money, which is very, very interesting. He's not guaranteed to have any of that money, because we talk about it in sports. Stephon Marbury, Mike D'Antoni, the head coach at the time of the New York Knicks, refused to play Stephon Marbury. Marbury was in a contract that was worth $21.9 million. He was making that money sitting down. That's why he had those nice suits, I'm sure. I'm relatively sure. $21.9 million to sit there and watch the game. Interesting. Very interesting. Because that was his money. It's guaranteed money. He's going to make it no matter what. $21.9 million was his. Revis has to work for this contract. Six seasons, nothing given to him on day one. No signing bonus. But he was willing to go there, which has to say a lot about his relationship with the Jets, that he's willing to take a contract with no guarantee of getting paid, no guaranteed money, no upfront cash. Says a lot about his relationship with the Jets. He says this about the Jets, quote, "At that point, when I heard that information," speaking about the Jets wanting to trade him, he said, "Yeah, I felt some type of way. I'm human. I have feelings just like everybody in this room, especially at a time when I was injured. I didn't know what to expect or what was going to happen going down the road. When you get information that you're getting traded, it feels like that team is giving up on you at a time in my career when I never had an injury like this." End quote. I don't have nothing to prove to the New York Jets, he went on to say. "I don't have nothing to prove to nobody. I know my expectations as a player, and that's that." So willing to prove himself that he's worth this contract. Not taking any guaranteed money, so going out there and working for it. Saying, "I'm a hard worker, it's all on me, I'll give it my all." But saying he doesn't owe anybody anything, including the Jets. He said, quote, "I don't have a chip for the New York Jets. I have a chip because I want to get on the field and play ball." End quote. That coming from Darrell Revis once again. Darrell just wanted to play. And making that statement, "Listen, I've never had an injury like this." He never had an ACL tear that was taking him out for the majority of the season. He never had an experience like this. Not with the Jets. So why give up on him then? But I think this is something that stemmed a lot longer than this. Not wanting to come to Jets camp because he wanted to rework his contract a couple seasons ago, wanted to get paid more. Last season, talking about that potential of wanting to get paid more. This season, I think at this point, and I don't knock the Jets for doing this, for this reason, is that it seems like for the past few seasons, Revis hasn't been happy with the Jets and what they're willing to pay him. So he's held out at times, and I've covered Jets camp the last few seasons here. Last, I believe, four seasons here. So, in covering that, well, three seasons at Cortland, and then keeping in touch with the team during the lockout time, and getting Wayne Hunter back on the show, who's now no longer with the team, and obviously their offensive woes, I'm not going to say are all because he's not there, but he definitely would have lightened the blow on Mark Sanchez a little bit. Maybe Mark went and blown into him and ran into his backside because he knew Wayne a little bit better than that, but who knows? Then you wouldn't have that footage to show over and over again if you are a Jets hater, or if you just want to show the not, you know, you're not top 10 or your worst plays of last season's NFL 2012-2013, whatever it may be. But covering this team for as long as I have, you get those emails that, you know, Revis may not be reporting to camp, or Revis has been asked about whether or not he's going to be attending camp in SUNY Cortland and this and that. So I think on the Jets side, they cut their losses in the sense of, we don't want to pay this guy the money that he wants. Maybe that's it. I don't know that for sure. but maybe we don't want to pay him the money that he wants. So, you know what? I'm not dealing with this every year. And I get that. But my issue with the New York Jets are the decisions that they've been making lately. You go to back-to-back AFC championship games, and granted, you don't make it to the Super Bowl, but you're in the final four of 32 teams in the NFL, which is not bad at all. There's many teams out there that would love to get to that point. The Cleveland Browns, the Kansas City Chiefs, the Dallas Cowboys, hello. And yeah, they get roped in that with the Browns and the Chiefs because are the Cowboys going to the playoffs? No. Okay. The Browns don't go and the Chiefs don't go either. So they're part of that group of teams. We'll talk about Dallas coming up here on Wake Up Call with Dan Satora on WakeUpCallDT.com. But they're part of those teams that don't show up from season to season in the here and now. So you look at the Jets who were showing up back-to-back seasons, freshman and sophomore year for Rex Ryan as a head coach, for Mark Sanchez as an NFL quarterback. They go to the AFC Championship game. Then they have a so-so year. Then, last year, this is what you say to Mark Sanchez. You give him an extension, and you bring in a lightning rod in Tim Tebow. Now, I've said it before. I like Tim, okay? I like Tim as a person off the field. I've had a chance to talk to him. Nice guy, okay? A guy that's not afraid to talk about God in public, I respect that. A guy who knows how to win however he does it. You can moan about his arm. You can complain that he's not a quarterback. He doesn't know how to be a quarterback. Yes, he does. He's won games. He has won national championships in college. He has won the Heisman Trophy. He knows how to be a good player. Okay? The question is, can he throw an 80-yard ball? The question is he Joe Montana? How many people are Joe Montana? The last time I checked, Joe Montana. The only person I know that's Joe Montana is Joe Montana. Steve Young is Steve Young. Troy Aikman is Troy Aikman. Okay? Michael Vick isn't even Michael Vick anymore. So how can you expect somebody else to be the next Michael Vick? Michael Vick is not the next Michael Vick. So when I look at Tim Tebow, I see a guy who knows how to win. I see someone who gets crowds pumped up, gets people going, gets people live into it for the right reasons, doesn't get himself in trouble, stand-up guy, not going out there and getting photographed by National Enquirer, not going out there and doing stupid things, getting himself arrested, being in a nightclub at 3 o'clock in the morning and having his team have to write down a set of rules just for old Timmy. And he's going on the field, and he's finding ways to win. He's the Denver Broncos starting quarterback. They go to the playoffs. They beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. Was it all Tim Tebow? No. Could they do it without Tim Tebow? Well, they didn't do it with Kyle Orton, so I think that answers your question. So, to me, he had to be a part of it. They were missing a good quarterback, and he was a good quarterback for them. Now, Peyton Manning, is he a better quarterback when you look at what he's done and what he's accomplished? Absolutely. Absolutely. Has he led the Broncos to the playoffs? Yes, he has. But Tim Tebow, in this scheme, it's never going to work. It's never going to work. So the people that complain about Mark Sanchez for all the mistakes he has made this past season, hear me out. Hear me out. If you're the starting quarterback on a team that in 2 out of 3 seasons, that just so happened to be your first 3 seasons in the NFL, mind you, some quarterbacks take 5, 6, 7 years before they get to AFC Championship, NFC Championship, the Super Bowl. So just hear me out. If I'm on a team that I've led to the AFC Championship game 2 seasons in a row out of 3 seasons, right? And I've dealt with injuries to my receiving core and my receiving core changing every single season. So I've dealt with my receivers changing. I've dealt with my running backs changing. I've dealt with my running backs like LaDainian Tomlinson not being able to run the ball. I've dealt with my Thomas Jones and him having an attitude at times and not being able to run the ball. I've dealt with that. I've dealt with that. Okay? I do all this work. I have a so-so season with the team with my third set of wide receivers of changes. Some staying the same, some changing. And you say to me, we're going to bring in Tim Tebow. Okay? We're going to bring him in, and we're not just going to bring him in. He's going to play your position, and it's going to happen randomly throughout games. Maybe we have a scheme. Maybe it's not random to you, but when we play the Bills, he's going to come in on the first drive, the third drive, and the 12th drive. When we play the Raiders, he's going to come in on the first, the second, the third, and then not until the 16th, if we have a 16th drive. Okay? You can't run a team successfully 99.9999999% of the time with two quarterbacks. You can't. You can't. Syracuse tried to do it before with Troy Nunes and R.J. Anderson. It didn't work. There were some good moments. There were some highlights. Weren't any bowl games. Nobody was winning anything. So look at this Jets team and understand the fact that Tim Tebow never belonged there. I made this statement on the show. I made the statement in public. Anybody who wanted to talk about it, I made the statement the day that it happened. Tim Tebow going to the New York Jets automatically was a problem. They were going to screw up. It was going to be a bad season. Bringing him onto that team was blowing up the team before the season started. Anybody that didn't know that wasn't paying attention to football. Tim Tebow doesn't belong there. He belongs on a team like Jacksonville because Jacksonville is his hometown. Jacksonville is in Florida where he had so much success, where people supported him, where people were okay with the type of quarterback he was being for the most part, where he will get people to put butts in the seats, where he will sell jerseys, where he can do good things. And you think Tim Tebow's a bad quarterback? I don't know him as a person off the field, but I will say this. Blaine Gabbert, seriously, dude? What? What is going on? What's going on? They call Tim Tebow a bad quarterback. Have you watched Blaine Gabbert? Have you seen him play? Have you watched Jamarcus Russell? Jamarcus Russell was the first pick in his draft. Made a lot of money. Man was getting paid over $3 million per loss. When I broke down his contract, it was like $4 million a loss. So, Jamarcus Russell makes it to the NFL, and people don't complain about him too much. Akili Smith makes it to the NFL, and people don't complain about him too much. Tim Couch is an early pick in the NFL draft, and people want to see what he has to do. So, Tim Tebow, who has won a national championship and a Heisman Trophy, goes to the NFL, and before he puts his foot onto the field, people are saying, hey, wait a second, hold on. He's better at hockey, or maybe he should be a pitcher, or maybe he should try out and be a shooting guard in the NBA, because he doesn't belong here. He doesn't belong in the NFL. Well, who does? Who does? Look at the quarterbacks in history. Who belongs in the NFL? The people that were hyped up, the people that so many analysts said, listen, this is the guy. He's going to change the world of the NFL. He is going to make things happen. He's going to put wonders, Super Bowls, so successful. How many guys have faltered in the NFL? How many guys who have won the Heisman Trophy have faltered in the NFL? Do you remember Rashawn Salaam, Chicago Bears running back? Do you remember a guy like that? Do you look back on a team with Keyshawn Carter on the Cincinnati Bengals and talk about a guy like that? Tim Tebow, in his first time as a starting quarterback, coming in for Kyle Orton and not even having a full season, went to the playoffs. Tim Tebow knows how to win games, but not in this crazy, stupid, ridiculous scheme. They call it a wildcat. Why don't you, if it's a wildcat, it's been declawed. Okay? This isn't a wildcat offense. They don't know how to run that offense. Absolutely not. A wildcat offense is set up to bring somebody in who can run the ball, catch the ball, and pass the ball. Or at least pass the ball and run the ball. Tim Tebow coming in, run, fake pass, run. That's all it was. And they were making him do these stupid goal line runs when he's on his own 40-yard line. Hey, Tim, why don't you sneak it up the middle for 1 yard? That works when he's on the goal line, yes. It doesn't work there. And Mark Sanchez having to split his time with Tim Tebow. And that offensive line, who was not a good offensive line from what I saw in training camp, offensive line in training camp, okay, number one. You get rid of Wayne Hunter, who worked his way to be a starter and knew what he needed to know on that team. Now, you bring in Tony Sperano, so there's going to be some changes and whatnot, but as offensive coordinator at the time. But Wayne Hunter had experience with the Jets. Mark Sanchez had experience with the Jets. And the guy that you're putting people in Wayne Hunter's place that weren't performing in training camp. What's that saying to your team? What's that saying to your quarterback? So there's all these issues. Patrick Turner comes in, steps up in training camp, one of the most comfortable receivers that Mark Sanchez is throwing to. He gets waived. Dustin Keller, who's the receiver he's most comfortable with, even though Dustin Keller's a tight end, he's injured. So you have all those issues. And then you bring in a guy like Mark Sanchez and you say, okay, do your job. Do your job with a subpar offensive line, with receivers you're not comfortable with a receiver that we got rid of even though you were comfortable with him. You're going to need to do all of this work on your own. Oh, and by the way, if we want to take you out on third down and put Tebow in, we're going to do that. If that's okay with you, even if it's not, we're going to do it. It doesn't make any sense. So the Jets, to me, have had a lot of issues, but they're self-inflicted wounds, most of them. And Darrell Revis is another self-inflicted wound. He's your best player. Now, I understand not wanting to deal with the BS of you don't want to pay him that money, but let me talk to you about something, okay? Who is your best player right now? Who's your best player? My mentality, who their best player is? Mark Sanchez. People could hate me for that. That's okay. Look at the statistics. Mark Sanchez is now their best player. He is. You're going to tell me a running back is? You're going to tell me Antonio Cromartie is? You're going to tell me that one of their receivers is? Santonio Holmes? Where's he most of the time? So, Mark Sanchez is now your best player. And he's a guy that you pissed off. And Darrell Revis is a guy that you pissed off. So where are you heading, New York Jets? What are you trying to do? Because all I know about the New York Jets right now is that this Jet's going to be grounded soon. There's going to be delays. And what I do know as well, coming up, the Bucks and the Jets are opening their season against each other at MetLife Stadium, 2013-2014. Not set in stone that Darrell Revis is going to be ready for this game. But that's happening in the first game of the season. And Darrell Revis had this to say about his new home. Quote, "There's no better place to win than here in Tampa. It's a blessing how highly this organization looks at me. It didn't happen in New York for certain reasons. There are a lot of reasons why not, but I'm here now, and I'm a Buck. And that's how it's going to be for the next 6 years," end quote. The Bucks were the worst of 32 NFL teams last season against the pass, and they have not only brought in Darrell Revis at corner, but they also brought in former San Francisco 49ers safety Deshaun Goldson, who in all 16 regular season, he played in all 16 regular season games in three of the last four seasons, has played in the playoffs in the last two seasons, had experience there. And in three of the last four seasons of playing all 16 regular season games, in each of those four seasons, even the one that he played 14 games, 55 or more individual tackles. So the last four seasons, he's had at least 55 individual tackles, not including the assisted ones. He's forced a fumble and recovered a fumble in each of the last two seasons and has three interceptions last season and has had three interceptions, at least three, in three of the last four seasons. So he's a man who can get picks for you, force fumbles, recover fumbles, and he's durable and able to last an entire season, including the playoffs, in all but one season where he missed just two games out of the 16 games in the regular season for the San Francisco 49ers. So it's not just Revis, it's now Goldson, who are coming on to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who are working to get better as the Jets are working to apparently be in the running for the number one pick of the 2014 NFL draft, because anything else they're working toward just doesn't make any sense right now on the positive side. We'll take a step aside here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tatora on Wake Up Call DT.com, part of Dan Tatora Broadcast Media. You'll hear from Carvell DeWitt and Carrion Daily Physical Therapy, and when we come back, you and I will be talking about Tony Romo, and then you'll get two exclusives you can't find anywhere else as you hear from a runner in the Boston Marathon who made it home safe and sound. And you'll also hear from the new American Athletic Conference Commissioner, Mike Oresko, formerly the Big East Conference Commissioner.
Carvel DeWitt, it's what happy tastes like. Do you know why? Because we make ice cream. Creamy, rich, flavorful ice cream. Not yogurt or iced milk like some of our competitors. Ice cream. Fresh, by hand, daily. For the calorie conscious, we have something new for you. Our new Carvelite. Same great flavor, creaminess, and texture of our regular ice cream with only 35 calories an ounce. So whether you want an ice cream cake, flying saucer, dasher, carvelanche, hard or soft ice cream, we will satisfy your craving with our fresh, handmade regular or new Carvelite ice cream. Carvel DeWitt. It's what happy tastes like.
Sometimes we can't help how we get injured, but we can help ourselves and how we get better. Hi, I'm Paula Carey from Carey and Daly Physical Therapy. I'm here on Wake Up Call to tell you that currently in New York State, you can be evaluated by a physical therapist without seeing your physician. Some insurance companies will allow up to 9 visits before a prescription is needed. At Carey and Daly Physical Therapy, our experienced staff will evaluate you and start you on a program appropriate for your injury. We know how important feeling good is to you. Let us help you improve your well-being by coming to see us at one of our 5 locations in upstate New York. Carey and Daly Physical Therapy, where we care about your body and are dedicated to helping you get well.
Find the location nearest you at CareyandDalyPT.com. That's C-A-R-E-Y and D-A-L-E-Y-P-T.com.
Welcome back here to Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on WakeUpCallDT.com, part of Dan Tortora Broadcast Media family. Once again, special thanks to Carvel DeWitt, Carey and Daly Physical Therapy, Dry Sig Apparel, and FanHands.com, who make every single thing that I do possible by helping support Dan Tortora Broadcast Media. I can't thank them enough for all that they do for me and that they do for you, the community. Carvel DeWitt gives you the Carvel Wake Up Call Sunday, folks. A bonding of Wake Up Call, the show, and Carvel DeWitt, great ice cream, and the show all put together, wrapped up in one. I mean, it's crazy. I think that if you have a bite of the Carvel Sunday, you actually get some of the statistics out of my brain. It's amazing how that happens. You know, somebody has told me before that they just scoop up some of that cookie dough with caramel, and all of a sudden they know Tony Romo's stats for the last 5 years. I'm not telling the truth. You don't know stats. Not from the ice cream. Come on now. But still, it's good. It's good quality ice cream. It's good. It tastes wonderful. It's a phenomenal way to set off this spring and summer. As it starts to get warmer, it cools you right down. It's got that great flavor, and you can get Carvel Light, which is less calories. Think about that, folks. You can go get my sundae at Carvel DeWitt right in Central New York, in your backyard, or if you're traveling in, come in and grab the Wake Up Call sundae. You get caramel, cookie dough pieces, soft-serve chocolate, vanilla, or a twist. And you can save some calories by going to Carvel as opposed to going anywhere else. How's that for you? At Carey and Daly Physical Therapy, you can save yourself from pain by getting on your path to hope and calling them right now at 315-652-4323, as I did to get myself better and get my knee on the path to hope. Dry Sig Apparel, every t-shirt you see, every hat you see, every time I do a giveaway and you have a Wake Up Call t-shirt or Wake Up Call hat that's a part of that giveaway, that's from Dry Sig Apparel, who have also made personalized jerseys for us in order to give a personalized jersey away. They made me a football jersey for the show that I can come out and wear and show you what the quality is. The jersey that I have is a quality that you're going to find with the teams that really go for the high-end high school jersey all over the country. These high school teams that are wearing those really nice jerseys that look professional. Dry Sig Apparel, helping support any team anywhere around the country. When you see a good jersey, look to the back and see if that Dry Sig label is on it. It should be if it's not. And to FanHands.com, who have done so much extensive work to figure out what would be a great fan accessory that's easy for you to put on, enjoy. It's not intrusive to anything. It's not huge. It's not hard to carry. It's a pair of gloves. You put them in your pocket. You bring them to the game. You become louder than the other fans on the team that you're rooting against. And all of a sudden, your team can hear you more, hear you better. You become the ultimate fan with the ultimate fan accessory of Fan Hands. And they only cost $10, folks. And you can support a good cause by going to the Fan Corner page of WakeUpCallDT.com and getting your pair of Fan Hands and donating some of that money that comes from there, 10%. of whatever you spend going straight to the Hurricane Sandy victims. So something special that you can only do right through wakeupcalldt.com. Make sure you do that. So a huge thanks to everyone that makes this possible. And a huge thanks to you, because when I talk about everyone that makes this possible, you're a huge part of that. And I cannot thank you enough for everything that you do. And now I'm asking you a question. I'm going to talk about it here. I'm going to give you my thoughts. I want to get your thoughts. Get onto facebook.com/wakeupcalldt and like the page and answer this question for me. Put up or shut up. What do you think Tony Romo is going to do this season? Will he put up? Will he actually move the Dallas Cowboys ahead? Or will he shut up? Will he continue to struggle as the Dallas Cowboys quarterback? You can also answer this question on Twitter. That's @CallDT, @CallDT. And I want to go to some of you before I give you my thoughts here. Some of you have responded on Facebook and on Twitter, and I want to take a look at Facebook right now where I asked this question and got a response from you here. We have a response from Giuseppe out in New York City area who said, bold statement, but it's how I feel. Super Bowl rings or not, I would not trade Romo for Eli, speaking of Eli Manning. So that is somebody saying, listen, Tony Romo, struggling or not, Super Bowl rings or not, he would not give up Tony Romo for Eli Manning. If you feel that way, let me know, folks, or if there's another way you feel about it, make sure you get in touch with me. And then Brian, weighing in on Twitter, said, Dallas will be in on the Johnny Football and Teddy Bridgewater sweepstakes next year, stating the fact that they will be looking for a college quarterback in next season's draft, looking at a guy like Johnny Football and Teddy Bridgewater, meaning that they're going to give up on Tony Romo after this season. So you got one person saying, listen, I wouldn't give up Tony Romo even though he doesn't have a Super Bowl ring, and somebody else saying, hey, get a rookie because Tony Romo is going to continue to falter. So I have two ends of the spectrum, two extreme different views going on here on Facebook and Twitter. Send me your views. Give me your thoughts. Tony Romo, is he worth keeping or would you get rid of him? Put up or shut up. What are your thoughts on Tony Romo? I will give you a little background on Tony and then tell you what I think here. Tony Romo, let's look at the past few seasons here, okay? A 4,000-yard passer in three of the last four seasons. In one of those seasons, the only season that he wasn't a 4,000-yard-plus passer, he was injured. He played 6 out of 16 games, and he already had 1,600 yards at that point. So that's saying something about where he most likely would have been. This is a guy who's thrown for over 4,000 yards four times in his career, got on the field in 2006-2007, threw for just under 3,000 yards, then threw for over 4,200, then over 3,000 again in 2008-2009, and then 4,000 in each of the seasons since then, 2009-2010, 11-12, and 12-13, with that only season of 2010-2011 where he was injured, so obviously wasn't going to have the opportunity to throw for over 4,000 yards, getting injured, just playing six games in that season. So this is a guy that could put numbers up. In the regular season, one of the best quarterbacks you're going to find. Last season, Cowboys don't make the playoffs, but Tony Romo gets the Cowboys to be ranked third out of 32 NFL teams in passing yards per game. Think about that. Think about that just for a second. 12 teams make the NFL playoffs. 20 teams stay home. Out of the 12 teams that made it, none of those teams were third overall. Tony Romo, with having a team that stayed home, had the third best passing offense in the country. That means out of those 12 teams that made the playoffs, a bunch of those teams were under Tony Romo and the Dallas Cowboys. So in the regular season, he gets it done. It's in those big games that he has the issue, and the interceptions. His interceptions have gone up. He had 10 interceptions two seasons ago, had 19 last season. So that's obviously affecting him. He's fumbling. He had 5 fumbles two seasons ago, 3 last season. So that's going to affect you as well. But he had his best season passing this past season, 4,903 yards on 425 completions. better than 65% in his completion percentage. So that's Tony Romo in the regular season. That sounds like a Super Bowl caliber quarterback. Then you go to the playoffs. Well, Romo has only helped the team to the playoffs a few times as a quarterback. And the last time they did it, 2009-2010, played two games in the playoffs, threw two touchdowns, one interception, had 442 yards, completed 45 of 70 passes, which is better than 64%, but the team doesn't get to the Super Bowl. So you look at Tony Romo's history. We look back to 2006-2007 season where he makes the playoffs, and the team doesn't go farther than one game. The following season, the team doesn't go farther than one game. Within this time, the Dallas Cowboys had a 13-3 record, which is the best record they've ever had in the history that they've been playing professional football. Think about that. They've won Super Bowls, okay? Dallas Cowboys have won five Super Bowls. They've been to eight, but they never had a 13-3 season. And in that season, Tony Romo and the Dallas Cowboys, who get a bye in the first round, didn't win their first game after going 13-3. So Tony Romo, I read you his stats as a regular season quarterback, and you think, wow, Super Bowl potential. I read you his stats as a postseason quarterback, and you think, wow, Jamarcus Russell. So this night and day is what's given this notion of, do the Cowboys keep him or do they move along? Because they haven't had a good quarterback since Troy Aikman. Now, some of that's their fault. They tried out two baseball players in Drew Henson and Chad Hutchinson, who were pitchers, and tried to make them football players. That's usually not going to translate. So unless you're a Bo Jackson that does everything. But you look at the Dallas Cowboys with Tony Romo, and they have had more success in the passing game. It may not show up in wins and losses, but they've had more success. They look better. They look stronger. They look like they're an offense that can actually threaten you. But at the end of the day, the team isn't going to the playoffs, and Tony Romo just signs a new contract. So the question is now, is he worth that money? Is he worth that contract money? So I'll tell you my opinion right now on Tony Romo. I give him one more season. I give him this season. Now, they gave him a contract extension, and it's not that I don't think he can do it. Okay, it's not that I don't think that Tony Romo is capable of being a strong player. That's not how I feel. I think that he's definitely capable, but I don't know what's going on. I don't know if it's a mentality. I don't know what it truly is that's affecting Tony Romo so much to be this unsuccessful in the playoffs, or to not even be able to get the team to the playoffs. Because we look at this new contract, okay, and what it truly means for him. $25 million signing bonus, first and foremost. I want to share with you that this is not included in the contract that I'm about to describe to you. The $25 million is not included in these numbers. For the upcoming season, he will have a $1.5 million base salary. Then, 2014, $3.5 million base salary. Then $17 million. Then $8.5 million, $14 million, $19.5 million. $20.5 million base salary in 2019. Now, the Cowboys are free to lower Tony Romo's salary. They would go down to a league minimum. And if they lower that, then the rest of the money goes into the signing bonus for him. So think about this. No matter what happens to his contract, if it stays where it is in these base salaries or it's lowered, he's still making the money. So within the next three seasons, Tony Romo will make $57 million. In the first four seasons of this new contract, he will make over $16 million on average per year. We talk about Darrell Revis, $16 million a year, but none of the money was guaranteed. Tony Romo is going to make this money no matter what. If they lower the money, it goes into the signing bonus. And his salary is going to look like $16 million a year, a little more than $16 million a year. And Darrell Revis has shut down wide receivers. Tony Romo has shut down the Dallas Cowboys in making a trip to the postseason. He shut down the bus. The bus never got over the border into the postseason. Darrell Revis, a different story. Now, I know they're two different positions, but think about that. So, I don't think Tony Romo is worth this money with what he's done so far, okay? That's what I'm saying. I don't think Tony Romo is worth saying, okay, you know what? Until 2019, you're going to be my quarterback. You're here with me, no matter what happens, okay? I'm going to give you millions of dollars from now through 2019. That I don't agree with. But I think he's capable. I'm not willing to give up on Tony Romo, but I would not be willing to give him 6 years, $108 million. That's where I'm in the middle of. Yeah, I'm not going to give up on him yet. Give him another season, maybe two other seasons, but I'm definitely not going to throw this money at him as if he's won me 9 Super Bowls. So that doesn't make sense to me. Give your thoughts. Facebook.com/wakeupcalldt or on Twitter at call, CallDT. Call DT on Twitter. Give me your thoughts on Tony Romo. Put up or shut up. Do you keep him? Do you get rid of him? What would you do with Tony Romo? I want to know. And coming up right now, very special. I've held on to it all throughout the show, folks, and happy to finally bring it to you. A very special conversation that we are about to have with Andrea Ashline, who is a runner in the Boston Marathon with everything that went on. Now, a sad moment, a tough moment, but also a moment where this country stepped up and people started doing what people should be doing every day, helping each other. Here to talk with me right now about the Boston Marathon and everything that happened, her experience, Andrea Ashline. Happy to have you on the air. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Happy to have you here on the show, obviously, for reasons that are unfortunate to have you come on here. But let's start with the marathon itself before everything happened. What brought you to Boston and what made you want to be a part of this race, how it all came about?
Well, I had qualified in September, and it was actually my first marathon in September, the Wine Glass in Corning, New York. And I had qualified, and I went on to look at the Boston Marathon just by chance, thinking it would probably already be closed, and it actually wasn't, which is very unusual. So I registered and went.
And going to this, what did it mean to you to put in your registration and be accepted and be able to go to the Boston Marathon? I mean, is this, as a runner, one of the biggest feats you can ever accomplish, not even just running in it, but being able to get there and being accepted to get there?
Yeah, I mean, when you run the Boston Marathon, no one really cares about what your time is when you are at Boston, because the thing is that you qualified. And it's a really, really big thing as a runner to even qualify. And for somebody, I've only run for about 2 years now. And I was the kid who got a C in gym because I hated every single sport. And I found running 2 years ago. And I put in a lot of work to do that. So to go to Boston as my second marathon ever is just an incredible thing.
And going into it, who, you know, did you run with anyone? Did you have anybody there by your side? Were you running on your own?
Well, I do run with the Syracuse YMCA, but this was, I had some people from that group that were running, but we didn't really go together. It was kind of more of my own personal thing, and then I had my parents and my husband there with me to cheer me on.
And where were they standing in, you know, in respect of, you know, the end line, the finish line? You know, where were they at as far as, you know, cheering you on at the marathon?
They were actually just like across the street from where the bombings took place. And my husband had left my parents at that location to come and find me, and then we were all going to just meet up somewhere else after. And so they actually, you know, did witness the smoke and the people running, whereas my husband and I were a little bit farther away because we were on the other side of the finish line.
So had you already finished the race, before the bomb, the first bomb went off.
Yeah.
So you're on, you're across the street. You're there. What were you, were you just, there with your husband celebrating, standing there, and then heard something? Did you see it? You know, just bring me through that.
It had been really difficult because the security at Boston is extremely crazy. So they have barriers up. It's very, very hard to get out and get into the running area. So I had had to walk all the way out to try and get to my husband, who was in the spectator area. And we ended up getting on two different sides of the street, and then we had to go back around. And all in all, after walking around trying to get to him, we finally had gotten together where we had a barrier in between us. But we were at least on the same side of the street. We could, touch each other. And then we heard the first bomb go off, almost immediately after we had gotten to each other. And people around me kind of, started cheering. And since I've never been to the Boston, we thought, oh, maybe it's like they do flares or cannons at the hour markers, the celebratory thing. And so other people around me kind of were like, thought it was something like that too. And then the second bomb went off, and I said, oh my god, what was that? Was that gunshots? What was that? And people kind of started saying that was an explosion, that was a bomb. And and then everybody started getting as far away from it as they could.
In that moment of the second one going off and you knowing, okay, this isn't a celebratory thing, what went on between you and your husband? You said there's a barrier between you at the time. When the second one went off, what happened between you two?
Then I basically just panicked. And, my husband is a very, very calm, low-key kind of person, so he's like my balancer. So, he was like, calm down, calm down. We're just going to walk down the street. We're going to get together. It's okay. So, we walked around the corner, and then there was like no end in sight to the barrier. So then finally, your body is in so much pain. So I just was like, I just going to jump over this barrier, even though I can't even move. I'm doing it. So, had he not have been right there, it would have been, I would have been hysterical.
Being there with him when the second explosion went off, your body's tired. Obviously you've been through a lot physically to run this race, to do this race. What's going through your head? What's on your mind at that point? Because as a runner, you think, okay, the explosion goes off, you have to run away from this, your body's in panic mode, but you're also tired. So, what was it like to be a runner in this type of situation, knowing that you're already spent, as far as your energy, a lot of your energy being used toward the marathon?
Yeah, I think you realize in a situation where this, how resilient our bodies truly are. And during the marathon, I had a pretty tough race, and I had moments where I thought, maybe I'm just going to drop out, maybe I'm not going to finish it. It didn't matter. I got over the barrier, and it was definitely painful, but then we walked blocks and blocks and blocks to get away and to find my parents, and it didn't even really occur to me how sore I was or how bad my legs hurt, because I think your body just has these extra reserves for when catastrophe happens that it's going to respond.
And once this happened, once your body is responding to what's going on here, where were your parents at this point?
They were actually, as soon as I got over the barrier, my husband and I hugged each other, we're good, we're safe, and I said, call my parents. So thank God, right when he had first called, he did get through. They were safe, they were walking away from, they kind of running away from where they had been, and that they were walking towards us so we would meet down farther away from the finish line, away from everything that was happening. Then cell reception obviously was turned off so that nothing could be detonated or anything. And it was very difficult to find them, and texting could work every once in a while, but phone calls wouldn't go through, and it actually took us an hour when, in actuality, when we really look back at the map, we were only about two blocks away from each other.
At this point, when you can't get in touch with each other, cell phone turned off, you can't make phone calls, is there a panic mode here, you know, between yourself, your husband, your family, that, you know, like you said, in hindsight, you were so close to one another, but really not knowing where each other were in this moment of trying to find each other? Was there a panic mode? I mean, you know, were there emotions, or did you try to stay calm? I know you said your husband's a calm, you know, let's just relax and everything's going to be okay. But, you know, at any point, did you really feel like maybe I'm not going to be able to find them for hours or whatnot?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, he was calm. We're going to find them. You know, he was really great at, you know, we couldn't get through with the phones, but he was talking to my brother home in Syracuse, and then my brother was able to text in to my mom, so he was kind of trying to help them get around. And, you know, my brother graduated from Northeastern, so that obviously helped because he knew the area a lot better. So he was kind of trying to direct my parents where to go. But, you know, I definitely was panicked that I didn't know. You know, I knew they were okay, and I knew we were talking to them every few minutes, but it still, like, wasn't enough. And, you know, and my mom has said the same thing, that, you know, my dad was like, calm down, we know they're fine, we know they're inside, we know they're safe. And she said, no, I can't calm down until I physically see her. And so I think it was the same kind of emotion, that, you know people are okay, and you know that they're safe, but you need to physically see it for yourself sometimes.
Bring me through that moment when you finally did get to physically see each other.
It was definitely very, very, very emotional. You know, you never think that you're going to live through an experience like that. You know, that seems like something you see on the news, and it's something like, oh, you know, you feel bad for the families and the people who that happens to, but you never really stop and think, like, what if something like that ever happened to us? So I just think it was just so much that, you know, something that you just never think that would happen to you, that it was just, like, just so overwhelming to just be with the people that you love.
Did you or your family get to see any of, you know, once things had happened, did anybody see any of the blood, any of the people that were out there injured, any of the people that were out there helping others? I mean, did you see any of that scene?
You know, when the second bomb went off, I actually purposely did not look back because I knew that myself would panic more looking back and seeing what was back there. My husband did turn around and did see the smoke, and my parents also saw the smoke and saw, you know, basically a stampede. Since they were close enough or far enough away from it, they didn't actually see anybody be injured, but they saw the aftermath of the bomb and everybody just stampeding, you know, away and trying to get away from the finish line and the bomb. So
what was that experience like for your parents to be in the middle of, you know, like you said, basically a stampede? What did they tell you about the atmosphere around that once they were trying to get to you?
You know, it was really, really, really scary for them, too, because, you know, my mom said, you know, she heard it, but she really didn't know what it was. My dad actually wears hearing aids, so he said the bomb to him was like, you know, the loudest sound he's ever heard in his life. And, you know, they're far enough away that they don't see them go off. They just see the smoke. You know, they think maybe something collapsed or something. They're not really sure. But then they said people just started running to them, and their only response was just to run, you know. And my parents are not runners in any way, shape, or form. So it was just, you know, panic, you know, people are stampeding towards them. What else do but turn and run with them?
To have everybody safe in one place, over 170 people injured, 3 people have died so far, to have your entire family there with you, I know that you're someone that has faith, and I know that you have a belief in God. What, in that moment, are you thinking? What is going through your head to know that some people are going home without their loved ones, but you are going home with everybody?
You know, I think, you know, everything happens for a reason. And, you know, for some reason, we all had a guardian angel that day. And, you know, to say that there's not, you know, there's a level of guilt that obviously, you know, I think all of us kind of have a little bit. You know, you're so happy that you're okay and that your loved ones are okay, but then, you know, there is a level of, oh my God, like their mom or their dad or their daughter or their son or their brother or their sister, they don't get to have that. And, you know, that's definitely something that is going to be definitely hard to come to grips with for a while.
After you get out of there, once you find each other, what happens in that moment? How do you get to where you need to go to, or where are you at? Was there a hotel that you had to go to? Were you getting, you know, straight out of there and heading back to Syracuse? What happened after you met up?
Well, actually, most of our cell phones were all dead. And for some reason, my mom never carries her phone charger. That day she did. I don't know why, but she just at the last second threw it in her purse. So when we were in the building, we ended up, you know, charging our phones a little bit. And we met another kid who had run the race for a charity who lived right on the course. And he had said, you know, all the T's and all the trains are shut down. And we knew that our car was 4 towns away. So he said, you know what? It's not a problem. We'll drive you home. We'll drive you over to, you know, where your car is. And then, you know, at least you can get out of Boston. And so then we end up having to walk probably around 2 miles or so around Boston to get over to where the closest his family could park to get him. And then it was actually at a T station, and by that time we were able to get on the T and then get to our car around 7 o'clock at night, and then return to Syracuse around 2 o'clock in the morning.
Having somebody help you, these are stories that, you know, have come up in a lot of different, you know, a lot of different people talking about different experiences that they've had. To have someone, like you said, your car 4 towns away, when someone reaches out to help you in that respect, you know, what's your reaction to that? And in this moment that obviously there's panic, there's fear of making sure that everybody's going to be together, then you all see each other, you're obviously tired from the race, and somebody reaches out a helping hand.
You know, the whole experience of Boston in general before anything happened was like nothing you can really even explain until you just do it. You know, you have people who have never seen you, met you in your whole entire life, sitting there screaming for you to keep going in the race, and you can do it. And I mean, that, just that feeling of, oh my gosh, I can't disappoint this person right here. And you don't even know that person. And their whole just demeanor the whole day was just so uplifting. And then to have somebody just say, you know, oh, you know, I don't even know who you are, but my dad will drive you 4 towns over to your car. And, you know, even just walking through the streets those 2 miles, we had 4 people stop us saying that we could stay in their house if they needed. They would give us a ride. Whatever we needed, they would help us and to make sure that we were all set. And, I mean, just to think that, you know, these people have no clue who we are. They just know that we have this common bond, that we've all just been through this catastrophe and that are willing to help. I mean, it just really gives you, you know, a perspective back that there is still some goodness in the world, even though something so terrible has just occurred. And, you know, I think that holding on to that goodness in people really does help people come through in the face of such adversity.
Seeing how people have responded, seeing how people have been in Boston, outside of Boston, just in general, to help one another, do you feel like there is any fear that was instilled. Do you feel like these bombers were successful in what they were trying to do, now knowing your experience and seeing what you went through and the people that reached out to you? Do you really think that the evil that tried to enter this city and this world the way that it wanted to succeeded?
No, I don't think so. And, you know, I've said in a few other interviews that I've done that, you know, to target runners is interesting, because runners are kind of the only group of people that I've ever met where it doesn't matter who you are, where you're from, like anything about you. You get to a start line at a race, you meet somebody, you become friends with somebody, you run with them for 10 miles, you talk to them about things that you don't talk to anybody about, but you just do because it's the sport. And nobody, you don't compete, you don't push people down. You know, it's such camaraderie that, you know, I think that there was no way that this was going to stop them. And if anything, I think that this made the running community stronger and more powerful than it was before. And I think that, you know, I would be shocked if the 118 Boston Marathon was not even bigger than it was this year.
And when you see so many people that were involved in this, you know, and then you talk about over 20,000 people running in a race, and then even more people that are watching them, when you look at what you just said about the running community and that it could be even bigger next year, is this something that you would want to do again?
Yeah, I think I definitely would do it again. You know, I think that, you know, for us to not do it again and to be scared, that is going to be letting them win. And, you know, the police have worked tirelessly for, you know, the whole week to find them and to put justice back. And I think to not do it and to say, no, I'm not ever going to do something that high profile race, you know, would be like saying, okay, you're right, I'll never do that again. I'll never run something like that. You won.
Now that you have come home and had an opportunity to watch, did you look back and see what happened? You know, you said in the moment, standing right there by the bombs and close enough that you could see the smoke, that you didn't turn around. Have you now taken the time to see what the scene was behind you now that you've been home?
Yes, I have.
And knowing that you were right there, knowing that you were so close to the pictures that you've seen now, what type of emotions are going, you know, went through you? What type of thoughts went through your mind now that you come to terms with the fact that that's what was right there, just a few yards away?
I mean, it definitely puts things more into perspective, you know, and definitely, I've had to stop myself from watching a lot of stuff just because it is just so emotional to even deal with, you know, being close. And I just, you know, my heart goes out to everybody who was right there, who does have these images firsthand, not from news stories, because, you know, it's definitely something that is going to be very difficult for everybody who was there and involved and had a loved one who was there to really overcome and really heal from this experience.
The manhunt goes on. You see them go after two different kids, one 26 years old, one 19 years old. Do you feel like it's over now? I mean, is there closure to it, knowing that one of them is dead and one is in custody? Or, you know, do you think it was more involved than that? I mean, what are your thoughts?
Well, yes and no. I mean, definitely there was a sense of relief yesterday that they did catch him, and that, you know, the two main suspects, the two people who they have shown that did this crime, you know, are not out in the streets anymore. But at the same time, you know, I think I'm 25 years old, and I would never have any idea how to do anything that they just did. And my husband is a chemical engineer, and he has no clue how to do anything that they just did. But it just makes me think that could 19-year-old and a 26-year-old really have done this all by themselves? And, you know, I just fear that for right now, dust has settled, and but I am a little bit hesitant to say that it's all over.
Do you think about it as outside of this country, a homegrown thing? I mean, when you say, you know, about what your husband does for a living and that he wouldn't know how to do this, and you thinking, you know, at 25 years old, how can somebody, you know, two people just do this alone? Are you fearful of something that came from outside of the United States? Are you fearful that there's evil here that you don't know about? I mean, where are your thoughts on that as far as, you know, the mentality of maybe this isn't just two people?
Yeah, I'm not really sure about, you know, where it's coming from. I mean, I don't know if it's foreign, I don't know if it's here, but, you know, you do know that they were here for 10 years, so that just, you know, is a little bit scary to me. It's not like they just came over last year, and you know, it makes me think that they're obviously probably did have some sort of contact here in the United States, and you know, it just makes you scared to just know, you know, where are you safe?
But as a runner, you made the statement, I can't say that I'll never do it again, and the fact that you would go out there and say, you know, you can't let them win. When we talk about fear, when we talk about the notion of where are you safe, which a lot of people, quite honestly, are thinking right now, how do you overcome that and get up and go to work and go to the store and, you know, go to a restaurant and sit down and try to enjoy yourself? After being in this situation, how do you go about your daily life knowing that this just happened in a place that nobody expected?
You know, it definitely is a struggle, and I think, you know, you just have to realize that you have to live. I mean, and to live in fear and to not do anything, then it's no better than not being here, you know. And obviously that this terror and that crime is becoming so prevalent, you know, in movie theaters and in schools and at running events, that, you know, it is definitely difficult, and I would be lying if I said it's not in the back of my mind. You know, when I go to work, you know, I'm a teacher after Sandy Hook, you know, I would be lying if I said it wasn't in the back of my mind. But, you know, you've got to pray and hope that somebody's out there looking out for you, and, you know, and that hopefully somehow all this crime and this hatred is going to start getting resolved, because, you know, it's not a way to live for at all anymore.
And that's something that has become important, you know, the statement after 9/11, we will never forget, but obviously some people have gone back to, you know, the ways of life that they had before. I don't want to call them normal. I think that some people have accepted them as normal, but, you know, getting in fights with people when you're driving, you know, just getting upset with people because you're having a bad day, somebody cuts you in line at Target, whatever it may be. But it seems like the little things are still getting people upset. People are forgetting what it was like to come together after 9/11. Is the bigger sin not just the Boston Marathon, but is the bigger sin to you if people go back to a way of life where they forget how to help one another?
Yeah, you know, I think it's hard in our daily life, our hustle and bustle, you know, our busy, crazy American way of life, you know, to sit and think about, you know, how could I have said hi to that person? Could I have been nicer? Could I have let that person in on the highway? And, you know, I think, you know, we get caught up and things happen and we're together, and then, you know, we start to forget. But, you know, I hope that, you know, everybody, you know, has that moment where they, you know, remember and, you know, try to do just at least one act of kindness a day, and, you know, and even just that one thing, you know, can really help us as a society, I think.
When you see Sandy Hook, which you talked about, 9/11 being a part of the Boston Marathon and the bombings that were there, as these occurrences happen, when you see people come together, when you see people help each other, you yourself and your family were helped, when that starts to go away, have you, in a sense, you know, learned from it? Have people around you learned from it? Because, you know, there are people that change for the better that think, okay, you know, this moment, it shouldn't have to take a massacre, it shouldn't have to take a tragedy for me to be nice to somebody I don't know. Do you feel like you've grown from these experiences, both the Boston Marathon and other ones that you weren't in, but obviously you've seen? Do you feel like you've become a better person from knowing that this world has some things that go on that can't really be explained?
Yeah, I definitely think so. You know, I've never been in a situation where, you know, I've had to offer my house to somebody because a tragedy happened, or, you know, give somebody a ride because of a tragedy happened. But, you know, after walking through the streets of Boston, having four separate people say that, you know, and two people that I went to high school with that I really didn't even talk to anymore, you know, reach out to me that they lived in Boston now, you know, makes you think like, wow, I would totally do that too. And, you know, just trying to find ways in my daily life that I can, you know, reach out to people who need help, or reach out to people just as simple as a smile or a hello.
As this world continues on the way that it's going, do you think that, you know, these things are going to become more prevalent in our society, something that, you know, we almost have to start expecting now that you've actually been on the grounds of one of them after knowing of Sandy Hook and other things that have happened? Do you feel like we almost have to be more expectful that this is going to start happening?
You know, I hate to say that that I think that our society is going to start moving in that direction. You know, I'm really hopeful, and I pray that these catastrophes and these horrific events start to be rectified and not be occurring so often, and we start finding ways to prevent these things from happening.
Having lived through the Boston bombing, what can you say to not only the United States community, but to the world community, as someone who is home safe from that terrorist attack? What do you want people to know from your experience?
You know, that we're all going to stand united, as runners, as Americans, as just people, and, you know, our hearts go out to everybody else who ran that, who experienced, who had any connection to that, and you know, that we're all going to show our support and help everybody who needs it as much as they can, as much as we can.
Well, Andrea, I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. I know that the memories and the thoughts can't be easy to go back and look at, and you know, obviously hoping the best for you, but happy to know that you're safe and that your family is safe. And I really appreciate, again, you coming on and talking with us about that.
Thank you.
Once again, Andrea Ashlein, runner in the Boston Marathon, telling her story right here on Wake Up Call with Dan Totora on wakeupcalldt.com. To everybody out there, be safe, make good decisions, enjoy your life, help one another, and don't wait for a tragedy to do a good deed. Don't ever wait for an excuse to do a good deed. Just do it. I want to, before we go, give you a very special conversation that I had with Mike Oresko. This is coming straight from on the court at the national championship game between the Louisville Cardinals and the Michigan Wolverines. Louisville winning that game. On the court, standing next to me, Mike Oresko. This is word for word, unedited. You get to hear it here, folks. You'll hear the music in the background and the celebration. Have never brought you this before, but you need to hear it. It's what Mike Oresko has to say about the Big East as far as what it's accomplished this season in the last Big East the way that it is, the way it looks right now. So in the final season of the Big East the way it is, and the future of the American Athletic Conference, can't hear this anywhere else. It comes to you right here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tatora on WakeUpCallDT.com, a Dan Tatora Broadcast Media exclusive. Mike Oresko and myself talking right on the court of the national championship game in the Georgia Dome.
Just wanted to talk to you about this moment, Mike, and what it means to you, the history. Jim Calhoun did it, and now Rick Pitino did it.
Yeah, Dan, it's very gratifying. You know, it's a great thrill to have two Hall of Fame coaches win it for us within a couple of years. And obviously it's a little bittersweet because obviously Louisville will be in the league next year. We're just very proud of them. They've been great. They've been wonderful, classy people throughout. And it's just great for the Big East. You know, it just shows you what the Big East has been. And we hope that going forward, our league will be, you know, very competitive and very good. And we hope to be here again. But this is a wonderful night for Louisville. And I congratulate them and I applaud them.
And, you know, getting that Hall of Fame nomination and then doing it on this court and being the only coach ever to win a championship with two different schools says a lot about a guy who's been in your league a while.
Yeah, he's a great coach. He's a great human being. I saw him in the locker room earlier before the game. He was relaxed, and, you know, we chatted for a minute. He's a wonderful guy, very well-deserved. You know, three teams to the Final Four, two national championships, and very happy for Kevin Ware. You know, it's a wonderful thing for him. The players played very hard. They were thinking of him all the time. His courage, is the way he's handled this whole thing. So it's very nice from a lot of different, you know, perspectives tonight, no question. But for Rick, wonderful for his team. Saw how hard they played. It's a great Michigan team. Yeah. Give them all the credit in the world, Wichita State. Wonderful Final Four, and I think it'll be a big hit TV-wise, too. I think it'll be a great rating.
And what does it mean to you that you had the only conference to have two schools, and bittersweet, like you said, Syracuse in and Louisville in for the Final Four for the last time?
Well, it was remarkable, but also we have two women's teams playing for the championship tomorrow. We had three in that Final Four. We could have easily had, with a little luck, we would have had all four teams in the two final championship games. That would have been something. As it is, to have three out of the four, it's quite a night for the Big East. And, you know, without looking backward or ahead, it's just a night to savor for a lot of great people.
Before I let you go here, the new conference, you have a name now. You're looking to the future. The summer starts it all. What do you have to say about the American Athletic Conference going forward?
I'm very pleased. I'm really pleased the way the name's been received. We've already carved out an identity. Everybody's calling it the American, and they're referring to it. We got a great response here across the country for the name, and that's really important because I think it's a durable name. I think it's going to be epitomize a good conference that's going to play hard and make it smart. And I'm going to be pleased to be with that group. It's a great group. We'll also wish our other brethren well and bright future for everyone, I believe, Dan.
Well, I look forward to working with you in the conference. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan. Really appreciate it. Nice to be with you. Thanks.
Once again, that's Mike Oresko, the American Athletic Conference Commissioner, the newest conference in the NCAA, folks. Mike Oresko, formerly of the old Big East Conference. The new Big East Conference has gone with the Catholic Seven and kept the name Big East Conference. The American Athletic Conference looking for some good things in the future, and I'll be bringing them to you. Thank you to Mike Oresko, as always. Always been nice to me and happy to have him here on the show. American Athletic Conference Commissioner. This is the show for Wake Up Call with Dan Tatora on WakeUpCallDT.com. You heard the annoying moment of the week, proudly brought to you by Carvel DeWitt. You heard the path to hope, proudly brought to you by Carrion Daily Physical Therapy. You heard my thoughts on Darrell Revis, on Tony Romo, on the New York Jets. You heard an exclusive conversation with a Boston Marathon runner, and you've heard an exclusive with Mike Oresko, the American Athletic Conference Commissioner, folks. And you think that that's enough, but it's not. So much more to come. Plenty of draft coverage, including an exclusive with Floyd Little, the man who is in high school, collegiate, and professional football Hall of Fames. He's had his moments in the NFL. We're talking about those players that he's watched at Syracuse who are about to have their moments in the NFL. He's hoping and believing in. You'll hear that conversation coming up and so much more. Get on Facebook.com/WakeUpCallDT and like the page. Go on Twitter and follow me at CallDT. That's CALLDT. And always be ready for the fan line. 315-5031-FAN. Stay tuned to when that line opens up to you. Always appreciate talking with you and appreciate you listening. This is Dan Totora signing off on WakeUpCallDT.com and also on iTunes. Catch up with the show and so much more, including videos on YouTube.com/WakeUpCallDT. Thank you all so much. We'll talk to you soon. This is Wake Up Call with Dan Totora on WakeUpCallDT.com, part of the Dan Totora Broadcast Media family.